Chapter 25. Sorcerer Ahoy. Kyrus was relieved to find the chair still in place upon his awakening. He had jammed it against the door before going to bed, worried that some superstitious man among the crew might decide he felt safer with no witch aboard the ship. The gentle swaying of the cabin reminded Kyrus that they were at sea, still in the Katamic, unless he had slept for days. The cabin had no window, and the only light came from the soft blue glow that Kyrus had left there the previous night. He was surprised how well rested he felt. He had feared that he would not sleep at all, given the motion of the ship and the worry about his safety. After bracing the door, he had curled up on the cabin's lone bunk, which he knew to be a luxury aboard ship, and let his vision drift into the ether. He had never tried it before, but he found that he could watch sources even through the wooden planks of the ship. It was fascinating and a bit eerie, being able to see through walls, if only in a limited fashion, but it let him keep track of where the other men on the ship were and reassure him that they were not gathering outside his door. However, fascination and falling asleep rarely could cohabitate in the same mind. While Kyrus intended to watch the door for signs of attack, he fell into watching the habits of his new shipmates. He heard voices and connected them to the distinct look of each source, and tried to catch names and add those to his collection as well. He was also disconcerted when he noted that he could even see through the floor below him, and grew irrationally nervous when he saw men milling about below decks under his cabin. He was not yet familiar with the layout of the ship, but he supposed that he was above one of the holds. The men had not congregated below him, just poked around a bit, and he saw a larger group of them lying further down the lower deck, which he gathered was the crew's quarters. Shortly after confirming that his impromptu door lock was secure, Kyrus let his vision back into the ether to check the environs outside his quarters. He could hear them at work out on the deck, and his ether vision confirmed that nearly the whole crew was above deck, with a few going to and from the hold. There were, in fact, a great many more men than he had remembered from the previous night. He resolved to look into it once he had a chance to look around the cabin more thoroughly. He had been preoccupied with his safety at first, and later with the goings-on aboard ship, and had not taken inventory of his new abode. For better or worse, for the time being, he was a pirate, and he had lost all his Akkadian possessions, save the clothes he wore and the expert's medallion that still hung around his neck. Thankfully, they had not seen fit to relieve him of it at Scar Harbor Jail. Whatever he had in his cabin would become his, temporarily at least. Blinking back into normal light vision, he reconnoitered the room. The whole of the cabin was done in dark-stained wood, polished to a shine where it had not worn. The single bunk was of a simple design, with little ornament aside from the round knobs at the footer. It had heavy blankets, feather pillows, and was quite comfortable for shipboard accommodations. There was a small writing desk, permanently attached to the wall, whose chair Kyrus had used to bar the door. A lantern hung from the ceiling in the middle of the room, and was low enough that Kyrus would have to watch his head lest he injure himself on it. He considered removing it, as he would be quite content to use magic to light his room, but he would have time to redecorate later. The most interesting furnishing in the cabin, though, was the footlocker. Made of oak and reinforced with iron bands and hardware, it had a formidable look to it. Unlike the rest of the cabin, it showed its age in the smooth-worn areas where a hand would reach to open or close it, and bore scratches and nicks in keeping with a chest that had traveled with its owner for years before coming aboard the Harbinger. Kyrus tried to open the lid and found it locked. He took some time to search the room, under the bed, in all the desk drawers, looking for compartments in the lantern, but could find no key. Likely it had been left in Akkadia with its owner. Kyrus studied the lock. He knew very little about locks, but was not above learning. He picked up a letter opener he found in the desk and jammed it into the keyhole and wiggled it around a bit, managing nothing aside from marring the edge of the opener. A few minutes of frustration later, he simply repeated the spell that had sprung him from his jail cell. Kotho, elextiumen veru, he chanted softly, and made sure to keep his fingers safely apart. At first, he merely warmed the lock, but slowly he brought his fingers closer together and watched as the metal began to glow. Then, with a quick burst of ether, he pressed his fingers together, creating a white-hot flash just before his fingers touched. Quickly, he reached out and pulled the lid open, keeping his fingers well away from the lock. A whiff of smoke rose from the ruined lock, causing Kairos to cough and turn his head away. He had managed to keep the wood from catching fire, though, and that was all he had hoped for. Inside the chest, he found clothing and personal effects. There were Akkadian Navy uniforms, a heavy jacket, a pair of worn shoes, a sterling silver tankard, a shaving kit, a dagger with a carved ivory handle, a coffer that was heavy with coins, and a collection of exotic jewelry. Kairos was careful not to confuse exotic with valuable, as the jewelry consisted of stuff Kairos would not have given a second look in the markets. There was a shark tooth necklace, with the teeth polished and dulled enough not to endanger the wearer. A bracelet of carved wood, made to look like it was woven. A belt buckle of hammered tin that showed the insignia of some Tikalish distillery, and a ring set with amber that contained a tiny spider. Kairos opened the coffer and counted over 1,200 ekels. It was a tidy sum, hardly enough to retire on, but certainly enough for a contingency in case he needed it. Kairos put the coffer away and took up the shaving kit. There was a small cup and brush, some soap, a razor, a leather strap, and a small mirror with a loop at one end. He looked about and found a hook on one wall and hung the mirror. Kairos had looked better. He was bruised and battered. He had not shaved in days, and he needed to comb his hair. He quickly rechecked the footlocker for a comb, but found nothing. He decided that in all likelihood the former occupant had been bald, or at least kept his head clean-shaven. Kairos angled the mirror a bit to look himself over. His clothes were torn and filthy, and he decided that he would need to find clothes somewhere on the ship that would fit him. His expert's medallion was intact and still around his neck, which he was oddly thankful for. There were to be few enough ties to his life in Akkadia, and that was one he had at least managed to keep with him. He took the medallion and examined it, looking over all the curves and lines, remembering the night he had gotten it. It had not been so long ago. Less than a month, even. Back then, Davin had been around, and Kairos had little to worry about beyond finishing his day's work. He had little in the way of responsibilities, and had spent his free time reading and playing chess with Davin. All the excitement he could crave, he lived out in his dream world, which seemed at the time to be a sensible alternative to risking his own life with a sword and armor. Since he had received the medallion, Davin had left for Golis to work for the king, and he had taken over the business. He had first discovered that the magic he saw in his dreams really worked, and had realized that the knight he saw in his dreams saw Kairos in his own. And most importantly, he had met Abile, a girl he had admired from afar for years, yet never worked up the courage to approach. His time with Abile had been the best of his life, and he regretted not having approached her sooner. He had not realized back then that he would have so little time with her before the strange turn his life had just taken would separate them. He had seen her just yesterday, yet he was heading the opposite direction with no clear plan to get back to her. He was missing her badly already. Kairos was all ready to wash up and make himself presentable when he realized he had no water. He sat down on the edge of the bed to consider that peculiar conundrum. The ship was surrounded by water, but Kairos had lived by the sea long enough to know better than to expect to drink or wash with seawater. Having to store any fresh water they would use probably meant that the pirates were not likely to use much of it for washing. Kairos was going to be in the same boat with them, both literally and figuratively. He went through the clothes in the footlocker and laid them out on the bed. He tried on various articles and found that, at the very least, the loose-fitting tunics that the Navy wore for working on deck were forgiving of size differences. The previous owner was shorter and stouter than Kyrus, but the billowing garment covered him well enough. While the sleeves were not long enough, the top covered his torso, though would not tuck in as a good Navy officer would wear it, and with the sleeves rolled up to his elbows, it did not look so ridiculous as it hung loosely from his shoulders. Kyrus checked the mirror again. He looked like a lost little boy who had been dressed in someone else's clothing. Slipping back to ether vision, he saw the dozens of men outside, each one a killer, and wondered how long a lost little boy might last among them. Shifting back to seeing in the light, Kyrus had an idea. He dug out the strange jewelry from the locker and put on the necklace, the bracelet, and the ring. He looked in the mirror and decided that the bracelet looked silly on him and removed it. The shark tooth necklace and spider ring looked just primitive enough that it might give second thoughts about his mystical powers. Kyrus also snuffed out the blue light in the room. It was easy on his eyes as he worked, but it was too calming and serene for the effect he wanted. Quickly casting the light spell again, he set the color to a deep, ominous red, the kind of light you saw looking through the grating of a wood stove or in a blacksmith's forge. While the pretense he was creating stood to give pause to those who might take advantage of the scrawny scrivener aboard, Kyrus had one real protection to add. He took the quill and ink that came with the desk and began drawing on the inside of the door. Brannis had done more in his time in the library than just select books to take along. He had read up on the proper runes for creating a warded door. Kyrus had never created a ward before, but had practiced a bit with the rune language, and his hand was steady for the kind of work that was required. When he finished drawing on the door, he inspected his work, and it looked just as he remembered it from his dream. Knowing that it would not last even the day as ink, Kyrus began tracing over the ink with a letter opener, carving the runes into the wood of the door. It took hours of work, but when he was finished, he energized the runes with ether and threw his weight against the door. By physical means, he could not budge the door at all. Releasing the ward, Kyrus finally allowed himself out on deck. Despite his initial apprehensions, Kyrus found himself enjoying his time out on deck. He was still unused to the swaying of the ship at sea, but had not actually fallen down yet, trying to walk. The noise and extra sources he saw were from the ship they had tethered themselves to. After asking around, he found that it was the Nyarissa, Stalyard's former trade ship. They were taking on additional supplies and had picked up a handful of additional crewmen. They were transferring aboard all the things Stalyard had prepared and trading in many of the belongings and supplies from the Navy's crew. Kyrus had made many friends among the men when he had seen them struggling to load crates of rum with the ship's primitive crane. He had sent men scrambling in every direction when he had grabbed the load with telekinesis and easily completed the task for them. Once they had departed and raised the sails, Kyrus had filled them with a strong wind to get them underway. "Stand by us, Mr. Hinterdale, and you will always have a welcome on this ship," Captain Zane had told him. The old pirate had seemed ecstatic to have the services of a true sorcerer aboard, even if he was a bit green, both in the lack of experience and his slight discomfort with sea travel. Kyrus had spent much of the day making the acquaintance of the rest of the crew. They seemed unscrupulous to a man, and while many seemed eager to endear themselves to the one who could lift their loads and fill their sails, Kyrus was sure that several were uncomfortable having a sorcerer on the ship. There was something in their eyes when he spoke to them. The pirates seemed bold enough by and large, but the ones who could not meet his gaze unnerved him. He supposed that it was partly the bizarre accoutrements he had outfitted himself with, but mostly that he was outside of their realm of knowledge. Of all the crew, the only ones who seemed comfortable around him were Captain Zane and First Mate Stalyard. The men themselves had a motley feel to them. They were of all nations and kingdoms, mostly low-born, but a few had been well-bred but disgraced. He lumped both Denric and Stalyard into the latter category, though he knew not the history of either man. The captain was clearly a well-educated man by his diction, and Stalyard seemed too keen to have gotten all his learning from the docks and alleys.
"Now what many of you have waited long for?"
Stalyard called out in the early evening hours, drawing men from all over the ship to the area of the main mast.
"This is our first haul. While we did not take the Nyarissa in battle, we nevertheless had much gold to bring aboard. This was gold once won by Captain Zane, and is now his reward to all of you for bringing him a new ship."
As men gathered about, they could see that he had his foot on a strong box and held a black-bound ledger in his one hand and a quill in the other. One of the men Kairos had not met opened the strong box, and those gathered nearest gasped and immediately began to press forward.
"Stay back, you dogs!" shouted Captain Zane from the quarter-deck,
where he was overseeing the dispersal of funds.
"You shall each get your share, and no more. See these railings?"
He pointed around the perimeter of the ship.
"This is the border of our little kingdom here, and within this kingdom there is no stealing. Out there," he gestured vaguely beyond the ship to the world at large, "all is for the taking, but here we are brothers. If any of you smart fellows think that your brothers back on land might steal from you, let me just assure you that I do not take kindly to bad blood aboard my ship. When we fight, when we plunder, we need to know that there is no knife at our back. When one prospers, we all do. When one fights, we all do. Theft from one of us is theft from all. God's willing, there will be loot enough for us all to retire like kings. Now, all of you hang back and wait for Mr. Stalyard to call your name. Then collect your share. There is a share for each of you, a share and a half for Mr. Stalyard, Mr. Crispin, and Mr. Holyoake, and two full shares for Mr. Hinterdale and for myself," Captain Zane said. With that, the crowd gathered themselves into something just shy of a mob and waited their turn like hungry jackals rather than rabid ones. Kairos hung well back and waited for the crush to die down before bothering to approach Stalyard. He leaned against the forecastle and watched as men slunk off to the crew quarters with handfuls of trade bars of gold, each roughly the size of a man's finger and square cut. Trade bars were used for buying ships and land, or for negotiating ransoms. Few of the crew had ever held one, and most did not know their exact worth, just that it was a lot more than the same weight in Ekel coins. Kairos had a better guess than most, but not by a lot. He figured that each was roughly 3,000 Ekels, and that most of the crew had just gotten more than a year's wages worth of legitimate work. When Kairos' name was finally called at the end, he received a share of 16 bars from the nearly empty strongbox. He had been mildly surprised that Captain Zane had seen fit to give Kairos a share equal to his own, but he supposed it made sense. If Kairos used his skill at magic to good effect, he was worth any 10 men of the crew. It was a bargain price for what he gave in return. Kairos was just grateful that it clearly showed the captain's support in front of the entire crew. Few enough men would be brave enough to risk crossing Kairos the sorcerer, but hopefully none were foolish enough to anger Captain Zane, scourge of the Katamic Sea. That evening, Kairos was invited to the captain's quarters, along with the ship's newly appointed officers. Kairos arrived promptly when informed by one of the crew, a young man named Stephen, that there was to be a dinner in celebration of their ship's liberation from the Icardians. He was struck immediately by how much larger and more luxurious the captain's cabin was. Despite their equal share of the loot, there was no mistaking that the real power was centered here. The cabin was appointed in dark-stained and polished wood, much like the one Kairos had claimed, but there was a large window at the rear, looking out the stern of the ship, and two smaller round windows in each of the port and starboard sides. The captain had a bed easily twice the size of Kairos's own, set to the starboard side of the room, and to the port side, situated between the windows, a locked liquor cabinet. The center of the room was dominated by a large table and chairs with wrought iron chandeliers suspended above it by sturdy iron chains
The periphery of the room had bookshelves, a smaller table with a map and charts, and there was a globe, something that Kyrus had never seen except in the anteroom of the Society of Learned Men. Whereas his own cabin had been plain yet sturdy, this cabin was decorated with scrollwork and carvings befitting a nobleman's parlor. Captain Zane was already seated and waiting, and Kyrus was the first to arrive.
"Welcome," he bid Kyrus. "Come in and make yourself comfortable. I am in excellent spirits today. The finest wine I was able to dig up aboard this ship is yours to enjoy tonight, along with the rest of the officers, once they arrive. Of course," he added, "the rest will be along a bit later. I asked Stephen to fetch you first, as I wish to speak to you privately, without everyone else around."
"About what, sir?" Kyrus asked. He remembered to add the "sir" at the end, which was going to take some getting used to. Kyrus had some idea of what the captain wanted to discuss, but he was willing to play dumb long enough to find out what Captain Zane already knew.
"I think you know, so I will be blunt. Who are you, Mr. Hinderdale?" Denric asked.
Leaning forward in his chair and resting his chin on his clasped hands, he looked Kyrus square in the eye, and Kyrus could not help but avert his gaze under the scrutiny.
"Until recently, just a scrivener like any other. Perhaps I was unusually talented, if I do say so, but..."
"No, that is not what I meant, and I believe you know that. Mr. Hinderdale, I am neither a fool nor a man to be trifled with. I find it impossible to believe that you learned the rudiments in a book somewhere. From what I have heard of your trial, there was no such volume found, despite a rather extensive search of your shop. So allow me to rephrase this question. Who else are you?"
Denric added, and Kyrus knew what he meant. Kyrus was not prepared to trust Captain Zane with the truth. He feared that anything he let on may find its way to the wrong ears in Brannis's world. So he thought fast and tried to come up with an alternate identity.
"In Vaedris," Kyrus said, "I am a highwayman. I work by way of the North Road out of Pevet, in the Cadran Empire, and have a hideaway not a half day's ride from the road. I work with a crew of 5 others, and the most recent to join us was a sorcerer who had fallen out of favor with Lord Whitestag and left his employ. I did not ask the cause of his disfavor or the terms of his departure. I've been studying his spells and watching him use them. My learning has thus been rather haphazard."
"Cadran, are you? Filthy bastards, the lot of them," Denric sneered. "I had rather hoped you were not one of them. But you have the look, now that I consider it."
"I could not agree more, Captain. I make my living robbing trade caravans, and I see that lot at their worst. I spare most of them. Bad business leaving a lot of bodies. But I do not regret when they choose valor over poverty and end up on the end of my blade," Kyrus said.
"A swordsman, eh? Show me," Denric said.
Still seated, he drew the cutlass sheathed at his hip and handed it across the table to Kyrus.
"Forgive me not being in practice in this world. These muscles will probably not do my skills justice," Kyrus said, and then took a few practice swipes around the cabin.
He briefly considered how easy it would be to run the captain through and wondered why he let himself sit at such a disadvantage. The blade felt heavy and awkward in his hands, far more so than Brannis's sword usually felt, but he was fairly certain he could defeat an unarmed pirate of middling years. The answer struck him, of course.
"I could try to run him through, of course, but that would hardly be the easiest way to kill him. I could light Denric Zane ablaze with hardly an effort from this range, and he knows it."
The pirate captain was brave enough just to be in the room alone with Kyrus, weapon or no weapon.
"You seem a bit scrawny in the arm to be waving that thing around, but I can see that you know how to use it, even if you could not outduel a single man on this ship," Denric said. "Hand it back here before you break something."
Kyrus dutifully returned the weapon to its owner, and the captain sheathed it once again.
"So you're a highwayman, you say?"
Denric left the question unfinished, and Kyrus was unsure what answer he was looking for.
"Yes. And what are you, or should I ask, who?"
Kairos countered. In Vaedras, I am a sorcerer, and a powerful one. Here I can barely draw enough to light a candle, but in Magrin, I am respected and powerful. I know plenty of magic and was properly schooled, even though I can hardly get much use out of it here, despite the bounty of ether that abounds. I could teach you. My price is service aboard my ship. And that you do not go around acting like a cadren, Denric said.
Acting like a cadren? What do you mean by that?
Kairos asked, genuinely confused. He had already started doing the figuring in his head.
Magrin claimed its independence from Cadren roughly 21 winters, years ago. And the war ended 20 ago. Denric must be at least in his middle 40s now. He was probably educated at the academy and very likely fought for Magrin in the war.
Kairos wondered for the first time if he might be able to return the favor Brannis had done him in teaching him magic. Maybe he could find a way to act as a spy for Cadren. Magrin outriders had taken high pass, and it was likely that they were somehow involved in the current goblin problem. Magrin had always been one for making odd alliances.
For starters, Denric said, resist the urge to conquer any place we dock. It may be hard since it runs deep in the blood, but I insist. I extend this to my ship as well. I will not have you fighting me for command. Also, there must be no talking of Vaedras, or anything at all from the other world, for that matter, when any besides myself or Mr. Stalyard are present. He and I are the only ones who know of the other world, and like as not, we are the only two who are not afraid of you just for practicing magic.
Stalyard, the first mate knows too? Kairos asked.
Aye, met him during the Freedom War on the other side. He is a traitor and scoundrel in both worlds. You would swear you had met the same man if you saw him there. He cannot work a lick of magic in either world, near as I can tell, though he is enough of a crackle player that I could not say for certain. He used to supply Magrin with striped cats and monohorns for our cavalry, after the Cadren occupation had left us with so little to defend ourselves. You Cadrens were never much as sailors, and he ran your patrol lines with ease. Tellurac is more developed nautically, and I suspect he used tricks he picked up around here to help him smuggle, Denric said.
Are there any others? I mean, not just on the ship?
I suspected when you called me a sorcerer that you knew something, but that was the first I had heard of anyone with knowledge of the other world. And I assume that you know it is another world, correct? Is it possible that it is just another part of this one? Kairos asked.
No, I think not. Tellurac is a vast place, but between myself and Stalyard, we have seen the mammoth share of it, with nothing hinting that it overlaps Vaedras at all. Stalyard and I have made quite a career of sharing information between worlds. When you pay close attention, you will find things that you can exploit, one world to the other, Denric said.
Such as?
Kairos pressed, taking a mouthful of the excellent wine Captain Zane had provided.
Well, cannons for one, Denric said,
and Kairos nearly choked on his wine.
And even though I do not have the draw you do, I use magic to my advantage on occasion myself.
Are you telling me that Magrin has cannons?
Kairos was incredulous. Immediately he thought of the new siege engine the goblins were reported to have used at Illard's Glen. Some sort of improved catapult, they said. Would not a cannon be seen as such, especially if they had only seen it from the receiving end?
You will see them in Cadren soon enough.
Pevitt, you said?
Give us a season and you will see them for yourself. Denric smiled. There will be a reckoning, and Cadren will find out what it is like to be occupied.
Why would you tell me this after I admitted to being Cadren? Surely you must suspect I would try to do something to stop you.
Why would I? Denric countered. I know from long experience that you cannot just bring information from one world to the next with no explanation. No one in Vaedras would believe you, and I doubt you could get through their primitive heads what a cannon was before they saw one used against them in battle. Cadren's no magic, I give them that much. But if you can match their magic on the battlefield, or even close the gap,
They lack the military strength Magrin has.
You would do well to consider helping the Magrin cause, Mr. Hinterdale, Denric offered. It sounds as if you do not have much love for your countrymen, and I do not imagine that the life of a brigand pays nearly so well as life as a spy. You could never be caught, since you could pass information in this world without ever giving cause to suspect you. Just worm your way into some position of value and feed information through me.
You've given me much to think on, Captain. I trust I do not need to decide right away, Kyrus said, taking another sip of his wine.
No, there is no rush, but I think it is high time we let everyone else in and celebrate it, Denric said.
Stephen,
he called out, and the young man opened the door promptly. Bring the officers in.
Aye, Captain,
the lad replied. The game had been going on for hours. Kyrus had played Crackle a few times, but mostly as a child with his brothers. He had never had much money and certainly had not frequented places where Crackle players could be found. There were no games quite like it in Kadrin, so Brennus had no experience to draw from either. The trade bars they had been given by Stalyart earlier in the day represented sums too large to be used for a game. But most of the crew had money of their own, of various currencies. Stalyart had a list he chalked onto a slate board that gave the exchange rates, which made it easier for Kyrus to keep track of how much money was actually being passed around the table. Kyrus had suspected cheating going into the game. The reputation of pirates was legendary, and none of it included fair play. He did not expect to catch any of them at it, since he was so new to the game and they all seemed to be much more comfortable with it. Or at least they all made it seem that way. There was a good chance that he would be going to bed a poor man, despite his share of the loot that he had received only hours earlier. He had traded a few of his trade bars for an impressive-looking stack of zimbals, the coinage of Feru Maru. The small octagonal zimbal coins had a square hole in the center, which Kyrus thought made them look exotic, certainly more interesting than the plain round Ekel coins he had grown up with. Early into the game, Kyrus had been losing regularly and steadily. He apologized for his many miscues in the etiquette of the game, which were easy to forgive when it was someone who was losing large sums. There had been jokes at his expense, and he seemed to be losing some of the mystique he had hoped to create in his persona. He was the land dweller, the scrivener, the kid. Kyrus decided to try his own hand at cheating.
Well, if I'm to be a pirate, I might as well try their way of playing. Let them just try to catch me at my way.
Kyrus, or rather Brannis, had long been able to tell when a sorcerer was lost in ether vision. He had seen the dreamy, vacant look often enough at the academy and in his own family home. He had no reason to believe that Captain Zane, or possibly even Mr. Stalyart, would miss the telltale sign of someone oblivious to the world of light. As the game went on, Kyrus tried slipping his sight just partly into the ether, and after an hour or so of practice, was comfortable enough with it that he could put his plan into effect. As the cards came to him, he marked them with tiny wisps of ether, each uniquely identifying the card for him. After several rounds, he had touched every card and could begin taking advantage. Knowing who held which cards made Crackle, a child's game, seem like child's play. Kyrus was careful not to be too blatant about his change in luck, but began to allow his pile of coins to steadily increase. To his zimbals and a pair of gold trade bars in front of him, he now had Eccles, Darshies, Clay Bones, and Fawns, collected from stashes that the various players at the table had brought with them from their homelands or acquired elsewhere in their travels throughout Tellurac.
You are not so bad at this game, Mr. Hinterdale,
Stalyart complimented him after Kyrus had taken a rather large pot from the first mate. The man's expression was inscrutable during a hand, but he became quite amiable when he was not involved, and he seemed to take his losses in stride, which was gracious of him since his pile had grown steadily through the night.
Aye, Mr. Hinterdale seems to have caught the gist of our little game, Holyoake commented, chomping on the end of his pipe.
Holyoke, though, seemed less charitable than Stalyart, and had been involved in the same hand until dropping out halfway through, when he decided that either Kyrus or Stalyart had him beaten.
"Well, I had not played it since I was a boy," Kyrus said. "You cannot expect me to jump right in and play with the likes of you fellows. Now that I've got my legs under me, I expect you will find me less of an easy mark."
Kyrus tried not to sound smug. He was enjoying winning, and was actually learning quite a lot about his fellow crewmates in the process. Being able to tell what cards they held, he knew when they were bluffing, and when they were trying to trick their opponents by feigning weakness when they were strong. Stalyart, for one, seemed to almost be able to tell what the other players held as well as Kyrus could.
"I wonder if he has some trick like mine," Kyrus mused.
"It seems our ship's wizard is a quick study. I wonder if he could learn to read nautical charts as quickly," Captain Zane said. "We've put to sea with no proper navigator aboard. A few of us can manage well enough to get us where we want to go, but it would be good to have someone take over, and frankly, Mr. Hinterdale, you could do with an occupation while at sea."
"I suppose I could learn it easily enough. I know how to read a map, certainly, and the rest ought to sort itself out from there. How hard could it be?" Kyrus said. He had certainly seen nautical charts before. Davin had a handful of them, which he had taken with him to Golis when he had left. Kyrus had never paid them overmuch attention, but he was at least familiar with the basics of what was included. Tides, water depths, hazards, and the like.
"This is serious business, Mr. Hinterdale. You've proven your worth with that magic of yours, but a mistake in navigation could run us aground. I shall have you apprenticed to Mr. Stalyart until he says you are fit to plot our course unassisted. I trust you will take his tutelage to heart," Denric said.
"Captain, wouldn't it be a bit, safer having someone with experience doing the navigating?"
Scrad objected. The thin quartermaster seemed to be in his cups a bit, but there were nods of agreement around the table.
"I am not letting him navigate until Mr. Stalyart had trained him to his satisfaction. I have every confidence that Mr. Hinterdale will be quick as a lightning bolt taking up the trade. If he learns it as quick as he picked up Crackle, he shall be guiding the ship better than any of us within the fortnight," Denric replied.
Kyrus was a bit dubious at the confidence the captain showed in him, but was more surprised that he had not reprimanded the quartermaster for questioning him. Kyrus was no scholar of naval comportment, but he was fairly certain that the Akkadian Navy took a dim view of underlings questioning their superiors' decisions. He had assumed that among pirates, the tolerance for such brazenness would have been nearly nil. In fact, Kyrus was beginning to question just how much danger he was truly in aboard Denric Zane's ship. Despite most of them carrying blades, he had yet to see anyone draw one in anger against another crewman. With all the drinking during their night of Crackle, there had been no brawl or serious threats, just a general joviality. With the captain and first mate in on the secret he carried, there was even a certain sense of protection from above. For the rest of the evening, Kyrus kept his winnings moderate. "Let them think I had a run of luck and nothing more," Kyrus thought. He even strategically lost a few hands to Holyoke and Scrad, who had seemed the least cordial toward him. He figured that it would be easier to like someone when you can take their money at cards. By the time the game broke up and each of them had retired to their quarters, Kyrus had added a hefty sum to the share of loot he had been awarded. He figured upon it being roughly a haul of 60,000 ekels, once he converted the various currencies using Stalyart's exchange rates. It was more than he had made in his lifetime up to that point. It was hardly a sum to retire on as a country gentleman, but it was certainly a strong start towards such a fortune. If Kyrus was ever to make his way back to Akkadia to reunite with Abelay, it would certainly not hurt to be wealthy by then. He doubted his reputation would allow him to ever settle within the city again, but with enough gold, he could start a new life and take Abelay along with him. Certainly there was gold enough to be had among these pirates that such a goal was not unrealistic. Kyrus sighed, thinking about the last night he and Abelay had spent together, and wishing that he had not left her to go back to his shop and work.
Brannis would have known better, he thought, punching his feather pillow in frustration. I was a fool to assume I had forever to court her. Kyrus walked the few steps to his now warded door and angrily poured ether into it, yanking a bit back at the last moment when he sensed it was about to burst. Let the ship crash against the rocks. That door is still not going anywhere. He could still see everyone in his vicinity aboard the ship, their sources overlaying his vision of the world of light. Kyrus was really appreciating his newfound trick of keeping his sight balanced between the worlds of ether and light. He wondered briefly if the world of ether was truly another world, like the one that Brannis lived in, or whether the ether world was common to both. It was a bit too philosophical for the late hour, and Kyrus's moderate drinking had nevertheless taken a small toll on his wakefulness. He resolved to ponder the question another day. Read a bit more from Basic Wards tonight, Brannis, if you do not mind, Kyrus thought before drifting off to sleep, feeling much more secure than he had the previous night. It was an odd feeling, knowing there was someone in another world watching over you, conspiring with you, sharing your thoughts and memories. Now that Kyrus knew the secret of his connection with Brannis, though, he found it comforting. It was like finding out a childhood imaginary friend had been real all along.